Someone told me the other day, like, man, you don't look 40 at all. And I'm like, I'm 28, man. I'm 28. Seems like you've been here for years. I'm like, I've been here 6 months, you know, and it's like I had no, in ministry, when you first get into a place, we usually call it that there's this, and for those of you pastors or ministry, you have what's called a honeymoon period. Well, we just skipped right past the honeymoon period here, and we just went right into, like, you know, stuff. So anyway, no, it's been great. But one of the things, believe it or not, about 6 months ago, 6 to 8 months ago, when I knew that I'd be making a transition and coming to Central Assembly, I had this moment where I thought, well, this is great, man. I love Pastor Jim, and he loves me, and I'm going to Central, but what am I going to do there? You know, I have no idea what I'm going to do there. And, I mean, we had, like, this vague idea of what needed to be done, and he's a risk taker, and he, you know, so he believes in people like me and who are also risk takers. And he said, you know what? I just believe in you, and you're going to do it. I thought, oh, well, that's awesome. So a long time ago, I thought about this thing, and I thought, you know what Central needs? It needs something called new community. And I had this phrase dropped in my heart by God, and I believe it's a God phrase. Obviously, it's a biblical phrase, but it's a community of faith, hope, and love. And I believe we needed something new here at Central. And there's a lot of good stuff that's here at Central that's been around for a long time, but we just needed something new. And so I just started praying one day, and this, like, phrase of a new community of faith, hope, and love. Faith because we're spiritual. Hope because we're looking forward and not behind. And I believe the people sitting in this room are part of the future. And faith, hope, and love. If there's anything that I know that is central to the gospel and to God's heart, it is this bizarre word called love. And we can express our love to God in many different ways. So came here, we planned it for a couple of months, and we launched this experiment during the summer, which, if you know anything about church ministry, you never do anything during the summertime. That's when everyone leaves. They're not here. And but we decided to do it anyway against all odds. And yeah, it's been a pretty fun ride. It's kind of like confusing because sometimes it's been so much fun. It's kind of interesting to figure out, okay, what are we actually doing? I don't know. We haven't got it all figured out. And but it's kind of fun being a part of something where it's not all figured out. Isn't it fun? Maybe just for me, huh? Okay. I love all you guys, but sometimes you don't talk back. So anyway, I'm from Alabama. In Alabama, you talk back. Come on. See, you talk back to the preacher. When the preacher asks a question, we don't ask rhetorical questions in Alabama. You talk back to the preacher, right? Man, that's what I'm talking about. So I spent the past 5 years in Toledo, Ohio, and just to tell you a little bit how small of a world it is, I've got two of my youth group kids right down here that have transferred to do ministry and do some other things. So Josh and Ben, would you both stand up just for a second, because we spent 5 years with each other in Toledo, and now they're here living in Springfield and staying at my house way too long last night. Love you both. But they're really great. And Josh was like, can I do some laundry at your house? Sure. Like, 5 loads later, you know, we get done. So, no, but it's been a blast. I do want to make a quick announcement. In 2 weeks from tonight, so not next Wednesday, not a week from tonight, but the next week, which I believe is the last Wednesday in September, we're going to be having a night of worship. I hate calling it this, but I keep teasing him. I'm like, I'm going to call it a night of worship with Tom Matrone. And he's like, do not call it that. No. But I've just been feeling in my heart for a long time that I just wanted Pastor Tom to come in and talk to us, not only about talk to us about worship, but more than talking about worship, just having an evening of consecration. If that church word, man, that's a churchy word, isn't it? Sorry, consecration and sanctification and all of these things, and we're going to have a great night. What are we going to do? I don't know. But we're going to have a great night of worship where we kind of talk about worship and we worship with Pastor Tom and a worship team. And that's all we're going to do that evening, is just talk about God and talk about how we can love Him and worship. And it's going to be 2 weeks from tonight. And man, it's going to be great. So mark your calendars. It's the last Wednesday of this month. And possibly the choir might be joining us. Not actually singing here, but in here joining us. That would be, you know, the choir's as big as we are. They're like huge. And so that could be scary. But no, Pastor Tom's going to have a good time. Well, anyway, love. That is the last part of our three kind of fold mission here. Faith, hope, and love. I read something interesting about love. For all you single people out there, I came across the top 10 ways for a Christian to dump someone. Thought you'd be interested in this. The top 10 ways for a Christian to dump someone. Number 10, I'm just not good enough for you. Number 9, this is kind of old, but you are the weakest link. Goodbye. Number 8, I've been seeing someone else. Ouch. Number 7, friends don't let friends date you. I like that's one of my favorite. Friends don't let friends date you. This one's kind of good. Number 6, since I've started dating you, I've become dumber. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul. Ouch. Number 5, I liked you, but then I got to know you. This one's my favorite. I had this told to me one time. Number 4, I'm dating Jesus, God, and the Holy Spirit. There's no room for you. That's a good one. Anyway, number 3, you're great and all, but you're just not God's best. Ouch. This one's cool. I hated this book. But number 2, I've been kissing you for the past 8 months now, but now I've decided to kiss dating goodbye. It's an old book. Anyway, number 1, you're my cousin? That's the worst. That is the worst. So we approach this topic of love, and man, if I've heard one sermon on love, I've heard like 1,000, and we're going to hear another one tonight because it's very important. If you turn in the book of Deuteronomy, I've been fascinated with the book of Deuteronomy, and we're going to talk about something that was called the New Exodus tonight, and but I've decided to kind of postpone that for a little bit because I wanted to talk about this issue of love. As we're kind of in September, you know, there's a lot of new people here, and I just thought it would be important to hear about the topic of love again because it is central to who we are, not only as Christians, but I believe who we are and who we need to be for the future here in this place and also for the church. It's interesting, the book of Deuteronomy is, most scholars believe it was written by one of the great leaders in antiquity called Moses, and there are some places in Deuteronomy, if you're really into this kind of thing, and you're like, you know what, there are some portions in Deuteronomy, especially towards the latter half of the book where it says, you know, it'll say things like at the beginning of a chapter that Moses told the children of Israel this, and you're like, well, that can't be like Moses writing the book, because why would Moses write in that person? And so there are some like theories out there that maybe someone towards the latter part of the book, because Moses dies at the end of the book. If you don't like sad endings, you might not want to read the last couple of chapters of Deuteronomy. He dies. I'll ruin the story for you if you don't know it already. So at the end, and so most scholars think that actually Joshua probably, most likely Joshua kind of finished the latter part of the book of Deuteronomy. We don't actually know that for sure. It could have been Moses, but I think it's safe to say most scholars commonly agree that the majority of the book of Deuteronomy was written by Moses, since it is essentially a grouping of about three and a half sermons that Moses gives the children of Israel. Last week, I know I called it the book of Moses a couple of times, and someone reminded me of that, and I thought, you know, it's not too far from the truth. I mean, he did write most of the book, but it is called the book of Deuteronomy if I mess up again tonight, because I don't think too much about those things, about what book it is. Anyway, so it's fascinating to me, mainly because I believe the central part of the book of Deuteronomy is found in chapter 6 in verse 4 and 5. Deuteronomy chapter 6, 4, and 5, essentially for me, at least in my theology, I believe, gives not only the children of Israel, but it gives us the very basis of our relationship and our obedience to Christ. Most people in Jewish faith, they would call Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. They have like this strange name for it because it's actually the word here in verse 4 in Hebrew is pronounced Shema, and that doesn't really mean much to anyone. But that word is kind of like this central point of monotheism, and it is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. But the verse that I want to focus in on is verse 5, and it says this: Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. In fact, Jesus, when he's pressed by like these teachers of the law in the New Testament about which is the greatest commandment, Jesus actually does one of his like Jesus judo moves, and he whips out the book of Deuteronomy, and he quotes to them this verse out of Deuteronomy. Chapter 6, verse 5. And he says, Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. This is the greatest commandment, and actually all of the law and the prophets, they hang on this one thing. And it's interesting that Moses puts this verse right here in the book of Deuteronomy. Because in fact, he just, if you look kind of right, you know, in the chapter before in the chapter before in 5, he actually goes through the Ten Commandments. He kind of rehearses to this next generation because the Exodus generation had already left Egypt, and now like their kids were being raised, and they knew about when Moses got the Ten Commandments and all of this stuff, but Moses was essentially reminding them. So he reminded them of the Ten Commandments. You know, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Observe the Sabbath day. Honor your father and mother. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not give false testimony, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife and set your, and you shall not set your desire on any, like your neighbor's house or maidservant or manservant or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to you. I mean, I don't know about you, I have not coveted my neighbor's ox or donkey, but you realize in context that was a very way of living. So, you know, it's the whole issue of coveting. But so Moses reminds the children of Israel about this. And then on the tail end of that, he talks about this. Look in verse 1 of chapter 6. He says, These are the commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long. So fear, you know, have this awe and reverence of God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you. And so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey so that it may go well with you and that you may increase greatly in the land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, promised you. And then he goes into this, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. To me, he explains to the children of Israel that you can keep all of these laws, but if it does not flow out of a heart of love, you've missed the whole point. There was a point in my life where I was saved in kind of later on in life. I came to church for the first time because my girlfriend invited me to church, and she said, if you don't go to church with me, then you can't date me and things like that. So as any 15 and a half year old's going to do, you're going to go to church. That's right. That's what we did. And so I went, and I remember I spent a couple of Sundays listening to this pastor speak, and this was kind of an interesting place because this pastor was like this clean, polished, really sharp guy, and this church was right next door to my high school. I didn't know that it was Assemblies of God. I didn't even know what the Assemblies of God, you know, I didn't know what that was. I didn't know anything. This church was called Eastern Shore Christian Center, and I went into this church, and I remember one day the pastor said to bow your heads and close your eyes, and so being a respectful Alabama boy, I did that because that's what the preacher said. So bow my head, close my eyes. And he said, if you've ever stared at the ceiling at night before you've gone to bed and wondered if there was something more in life, I want you to raise your hand. And I'm like, how did he know that? How did he know that? And then he's like, if you've ever wondered what really true love is, I want you to raise your hand. And I'm like, man, this guy is like living with me or something. And I'm thinking, how does this guy know me this, you know, so well? And this issue of love came up. I didn't grow up in a very emotionally connected home. It was kind of a home where you were praised if you did really well in the football game Friday night and things like that. And so love for me was like this obscure concept. And when I realized that God loved me for who I was and not for the perfect son or the perfect person I could be, it was the moment that I gave my heart to Christ. And it's interesting because, you know, this word love is interesting because sometimes I say I love pizza and I love, like, my cat and I love things. I love Taco Bell and I love these. And then we, on the same breath, we say I love Jesus. And it's, to me, it's a little bizarre because love for us can be on different degrees, but we say the same word. Listen to what John says in chapter 15, verse 13. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Tonight, I'm not going to really talk about this horizontal love that we have between each other, but yet a vertical love. And I believe that even in the book of Deuteronomy, as you'll read it, and if you read it, sometimes I encourage you to read it in one sitting if you can, you will always see this theme about obedience. It's about being obedient to God. And there was a time in my life after I gave my heart to Christ and kind of came to know him, I interned in this church, blah, blah, blah. I ended up becoming the interim youth pastor of this church through a series of a number of different events. And as I was the interim youth pastor in this church, I had this sense, because I had no formal training in ministry, I'd really not had any formal thing of like discipleship, and I was kind of wrestling, you know, with even who I was in Christ. And I remember thinking to myself as I was a youth pastor that if I did not read my Bible and pray for literally 1 hour every day in the morning before I started the actual work, then I was not worthy to stand up and preach to the teenagers that I was youth pastoring at. I was kind of trapped in this, what I would call this like legalistic bondage. And it's, I don't know if any of you have ever been there, but it drove me to this point of burnout. And it drove me to this point because I could not live to these expectations that I put on myself. There's just no way. I was trying to be like this perfect guy. And this is when I was about 18 years old or so. And I remember it drove me to the point of burnout, and I remember I left that place, and ironically enough, I left that place as a youth pastor, and I came straight to Central Bible College. And as I came to Central Bible College, I stayed in Horton Second West, which is this dorm in, at CBC. I stayed in Horton Second West, and for the first 30 days, I did not go to church. And it was so interesting, because I went from preaching 3 times a week to not even going to church in literally 1 week's time. And I cannot tell you what this did to my own personal soul. It literally wrecked me. I remember sitting in my dorm room just covered and drenched, it felt like, with guilt of how can I be a youth pastor? I was just a youth pastor last week, and now I'm not even going to church. And I remember the first time that I came to actually this church. This was actually where we used to have youth. And I remember I came here, and I remember coming down to these altars. There were these really neat green velvet chairs in here. If any of you old schoolers know about that, they're actually in the balcony. I go up there every once in a while and just sit, just reminisce. But these green velvet chairs, and I remember the very first time I came down, man, I feel old now. I came down to like right around in this area, and I literally just laid before God, and I don't even know how long it was. But I literally remember feeling God pouring in his love to my life. It's like I could literally sense this feeling of guilt being washed off of me. And I realized for the first day, it's such a simple concept, but that I cannot earn my way. I cannot get God to love me any more than he already does. He just loves me. He is love. And then I realized that my obedience and my coming to church was not an expression of I just didn't need to be obedient. You see, I was doing all those right things, but didn't have love of God in my life. Does that make sense? I was doing all the physical acts of even being a youth pastor, preaching, and like going to church and leading Sunday school, but yet when push came to shove, I really was burned out and forgot that love of Christ is preeminent. So I was reading something this past week. The Bible refers to Jesus as Savior 37 times. And I did this, I think I mentioned this last week. And he refers to Jesus being Lord 6,642 times. It's a 200-to-1 ratio. And isn't it interesting that sometimes, even in my life, I'm glad that I am a Christian, but yet I have not let God become Lord of all my life. And so I was reading in this book by A.W. Tozer, and he was speaking about dead men and the similarities that we as Christians should have with dead men. Three things, and then we're just going to close for tonight. It's about taking up your cross. A.W. Tozer said on dead men, the things that we have in common with a dead man is this. A dead man faces in one direction. A dead man never looks back. And a dead man has no more plans of his own. A dead man faces in one direction. A dead man never looks back. And a dead man has no more plans of his own. See, I believe true surrender is just like that. That we face in one direction, that we never look back, and that we have no more plans on our own. Sometimes I would do this with ministries I've been involved with. I would take out a poster board and I would hang it up and I would say to a group of people, you can imagine doing it here tonight, tell me some things you are not proud of that you've done, maybe in the past week or two or the past year. And I remember I would do this as a team. I would begin to write those things out. People would just shout out things and I'd just write them out on this poster board. We'd get down and I'd get all these little nook and crannies on this poster board filled with things that they weren't proud of. And we would talk about how God loves us in such a way that he would take this poster board and he literally like throws it away and he gives us a fresh, clean slate to write on. You may say, this is so elementary tonight. And I would just say to you, yes, it is. But the thought that I just wanted to leave you with tonight is about God's total control over your life. And I want to close with just a final story that would help illustrate this. This is one of the best books that you could ever buy, I believe, for your personal devotions. This is a book called Devotional Classics. It's edited by a guy named Richard Foster. He wrote such works as like Celebration of Discipline and a couple of other things like that. And this is actually, this is a book of kind of compilation of different things. And I wanted to read to you a portion from this book that's called Mirror to Christianity by C.S. Lewis. It says this, that is why the real problem of the Christian life comes where people do not usually look for it. It comes the very moment you wake up each morning. All your wishes and hopes for the day rush at you like wild animals. And the first job each morning consists simply of shoving them all back and listening to that other voice, taking that other point of view, letting that larger, stronger, quieter life come back flowing in. And so on all day, standing back from all your natural fussings and frettings, coming in out of the wind. Now listen to this. We can only do this for moments at first. But from those moments, the new sort of life will be spreading through our system, because now we are letting him work at the right part of us. It is the difference between paint, which is merely laid on the surface, and a dye or stain, which soaks right through.